I gave him some tambourine. He gave me a scream. I washed his dirty underwear. He made me toast. Music filled my mug with Vaseline. I gave him a chug. We could be happy.
A lovely little song. That was, who was that, Muriel? That was the Hidden Cameras. Music Is My Boyfriend. That's CanCon, right? It's cute. Sure. Yeah. Okay. CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Inkstud Show, the radio show where we talk about comics. My guests today one's a cartoonist, but we're not talking about his cartooning today. I've got Dustin Harbin from the comic store Heroes Aren't Hard to Find, as well as one of the principal organizers of Heroes Con in North Carolina. And the other gentleman has been on the show, I guess it was, what, April? Chris Butcher from the Beguiling Comics, also one of the main organizers of the Toronto Comic Art Festival. And I think today, the idea is we're going to talk about comics retailing and kind of come up from the angle of how small press can get more involved, and also looking at what is going along with comics retailing. It is a changing market and field. So have I got you there, boys?
Hey, yeah. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
I'm here. This is Chris.
And we got Dustin there, too?
I said I was here.
Okay, you're very quiet in comparison, Dustin, so you're going to have to be a little louder on the phone, because unfortunately I can't separate the phone lines. It all comes through one channel.
So. I see. Is this loud enough for what I'm talking right now?
That is good, my friend.
Okay.
That is good.
I will try to blast you as much as I can.
All right.
That'll be excellent, because when I'm loud and talking over you, I'll just talk right over you. It'll be great.
But I thought I would be the loud one to talk over. What? Never mind.
Technology says otherwise, Dustin. Shush. Let's go.
This isn't working out. This is a bad idea.
You're ruining all the Canadian-American stereotypes. Chris's store is in Toronto, and Dustin's is in Freedom Land, North Carolina?
Yeah, we're all free down here, so whatever, monarchy, commonwealth.
We like our queen. So how about we start out just introducing you guys and what you got going on, for lack of a better term, maybe a little bit about the story you're involved with. We'll start with you, Chris.
Okay, yeah. My name is Christopher. I am the manager of the Beguiling. And, we've been in business for 23 years now doing comics creator events and selling basically every kind of comic. But we're more known for independent and alternative and art comics, as well as manga now. That's kind of my fault. But it's great. We've been doing these events and stuff for a number of years. And right when I got hired on at the store, or actually before, I came up with the idea of doing a sort of a show like an SPX or a Mocha or something like that, but in Toronto, and focusing primarily on Canadian cartoonists. And so I actually came on, I was doing that and working with the store on sort of their events and things like that, and then came on as a manager afterwards, and actually ended up working in the store again. But I've been, retailing comics and doing events and in the comics industry for very, 20 years now, I guess, which is terrifying.
20 years, really?
Yeah, seriously.
Wow.
I've been a retailer since I was 15, so I'm 30 now. And before that, I actually used to make mini comics and drive to all the conventions and stuff and sell them myself. This is like before even SPX and stuff. So it's been a long time.
That'll add to it because you've been through the mid 90s debacle.
Oh man, yeah,
for lack of a better term.
I was hired on at my first comic book store job just before I actually just wrote about this, just before the industry collapsed basically, and Marvel bought Heroes World and Diamond rose to prominence, so I actually got to see it both ways. And I've been on the other side of the mini comics, the convention table, selling comics and stuff like that, selling my own stuff. So yeah, it should be really good event talk today.
And Dustin, tell us about yourself.
My name is Dustin Harbin, and I am, like Christopher, started working Heroes Are Hard to Find in 96, I think literally a couple of months before Marvel bought Heroes World and the whole, and all that, although I think the crash was kind of already happening by then. But, I've worked there for the last 13 years, with a couple of breaks, and now do mostly the, creative director type stuff, design and marketing, and I actually don't work in the store as much anymore, so I'm not directly related with the ordering except for some of the mini comics and so forth. But it's a it's unlike the Beguiling, which is an amazing store, especially with someone like me that's into indie comics. Our store is more superhero based, with a edging into more like art and literary comics. Mm-hmm. Most of our nut each week definitely comes from New Avengers or whatever the Batman is, or having a hard time even thinking of those those series. Spider-Pat, whatever the popular superhero book is. But and I work with Heroes Con as one of the organizers under Shelton Drum, who is the owner and founder and boss man. And we have, like the store, been edging into the indie world as well, which is, of course, more pleasant for me, being interested in that world myself.
As well as you are branching more into doing mini comics, you're kind of going the opposite direction of Christopher.
Are you saying I'm turning from a retailer into a cartoonist?
Yeah.
The opposite way. I would suspect that if Christopher used to make comics, he may one day make them again. It seems like a hard thing to give up forever.
It is. I've got so many half-started and abandoned sketchbooks, man. It's awful. It's something I love doing. But I actually really love working with other cartoonists too, and pumping their stuff like Dustin, and that's what we do the festival. I didn't actually plug TCAP. I'm sorry. I'm gonna interrupt. TCAP is May 8th and 9th this year, so we hope you all will come. It is in Toronto. You can find out more at torontocomics.com. Okay, I'm done.
I'll be there.
All right, awesome.
I will also be there.
There we go.
I don't know, man. We didn't accept your application yet. I don't know if you're here, Dustin.
That's why I said I hope.
okay, good.
That's precisely what I'm hoping for. My application be accepted.
And briberies are kosher?
They won't take my American dollars. I keep sending my American checks up there, and they keep coming back. They write NSS on there. I don't know what that means. I don't know if that's Canadian code or...
I think you should more focus on a barter system.
Nice.
I don't think I have anything that anyone in Canada wants. Well, I'd be a citizen.
Now, Dustin mentioned the mainstream stuff is the core goods. Is that the case with the Beguiling, or not so much?
It's interesting, actually. The store's gotten the walls between what kind of comics sell to who have really actually broken down over the last 20 years in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Where for a long time there seemed to be a lot of like, I only read 8-Ball, or I only read Love and Rockets. I don't read that superhero stuff. But even you look at both of those guys, and they've got a lot of affection for especially classic superhero stuff. So I think that as comics become more mainstream just as a medium, I think that those walls are breaking down a little bit. I know that before I started there, years and years before, like it was just like a hardcore, this is what we love and this is what we do, and we'll carry this other stuff, we won't really like it. And that started to change a lot when the current owner, Peter Bergamo, bought the store 13 years ago. And it's changed even more since I got there, because all my comics retailing background was from a pretty heavy superhero-y, vertigo-y kind of place. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely changed a lot for us. We love our Wednesday customers who come through and have to be there every Wednesday to pick up stuff, but you're starting to see more people who aren't just picking up Marvel and DCs, and will grab a couple of books that are, that are out there as well, that would appeal to people, like, whether it's Hellboy, which is sort of its own institution at this point, or even something cool like Chew, or some of the cooler Image comics, or some of the cooler Indian alternative comics. And it's nice. It's nice when you see stuff like that that sells to that audience, because, to be honest, those guys are in every week, man. They drive a lot of the business, and they make it so that we have a more consistent dollar coming in. You can't go wrong with that.
That's something I find fascinating about comics, is it's one of the few retailing things where you have like this day that you're guaranteed customers.
It's weird.
It's such an, I mean, music kind of has that with Tuesdays, but not so much anymore, obviously, because no one buys CDs.
And music is leaked online weeks, if not months, before a release date. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, no, definitely, if not months. Maybe we'll jump into the small press aspect of what has been successful for small press folks getting their way in to comic stores, into stores like your guys' stores. Because one thing you touched on is you both are involved with comic conventions, and I have this weird thing in my head where I kind of see comic conventions as they're fun, party time, see all sorts of stuff different people are doing, but in one aspect, it's almost a limiting thing, because your customer base is whoever attends that comic convention in some ways. And then from there, it pilfers out. But I kind of wonder, the differences. Maybe I'm making my question too big.
I want Dustin to go first, because I just talked for a little while. Dustin, you got anything?
I'm trying to work my way backwards through that question.
let's start out with what's been working for small press stuff, making its way into the stores.
Well, the best way, that, for one thing, having someone who actively wants to stock that stuff is the first and most necessary thing. You have to convince a retailer that they're going to make some money, or if not make money, at least build the diversity of their store, make their store more attractive to, like what Christopher was describing, a burgeoning diversification of clientele, like where we have like 1,000% more women shopping randomly in the store now than when I started, or 1,000% more, lawyers and businessmen or moms and, just people that didn't used to come in the comic book store typically are now there. And I think having a rich stock helps that. So one thing is just having a retailer who's forward thinking on some level and wants to attract that. But the biggest thing, speaking of conventions, to me is meeting people in person and just give them your comics. Just be like, hey, I want you to see this. I'd love to stock it in your store if you have time. We can talk about, in a non-aggressive kind of way. It really drives me crazy when someone turns it into a guilt trip. Like, why do you guys not carry my... I mean, it is the surest way to then forever not carry that book, just like out of spite.
It's the difference between persistent and being obnoxious. And, man, more cartoonists could learn that difference. Like, we appreciate persistence. We appreciate that you, like, believe in your art and you want to be professional about this. I want to make sure that we carry it. But at a certain point, we are going to do it or we're going to not. And continuing to, you know, like the guilt trip or the asking every month, you know, if we did get into the store, how's it selling? You know, like, it's dude, you're one of, like, 10,000 items I've got in the store. I can't afford a 15-minute phone call with you every week.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, the phone, I hate to. I just hate the telephone, period. But getting phone calls about that is almost like a guilt trip, too. Like, I have to stop what I'm doing and hear a pitch for a thing. Or the people call sometimes to point out that their book is listed in previews, which is tough when an email is perfect for that. Like, okay, I can look at this or not. Based on my time, my schedule, I don't have to. I'm just allergic to the telephone. Now, that may be part of that problem.
I can see the hives breaking out right now.
It just may be me being a spiteful boor, I guess. But
and
yeah.
Actually, the thing, too, is that, I mean, realizing that you're talking to retailers, they're really idiosyncratic. I mean, Dustin and I are pretty progressive in the spectrum. We're in the upper fifth percentile of progressive retail people. But, you know, I know there's a couple of retailers I like. There's one, Jim Crocker, who runs Modern Myths. Has a great couple stores, actually, and he's a good guy. I like chatting with him at industry functions and stuff. But I think he's totally crazy as well, because if he gets an unsolicited email from someone promoting their book, he just promises to never, ever order that book ever again.
That's insane. Like,
that's totally insane. But he runs a great store.
Insane.
But at the same time, I know some people... Because he wants people to call him, and that's, like, his idiosyncratic thing. And I could point out dozens of other retailer, like... You know, like weird idiosyncrasies. You know, like Dustin hates talking on the telephone, and Chris doesn't want to talk to you at all.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just, yeah. I mean, the other thing you got to realize is, I mean, you're selling to people who are basically entrepreneurs and small business owners who didn't like the way things were running and decided to do this for themselves. I mean, you're going to run into people that have very strongly held positions on things, and the best you can do is be professional and smile and not take up too much of anyone's time and do your best, you know? Like, you can't get too bent out of shape about any aspect of it.
One thing I was thinking about the other day is, like, because I do a radio show and I occasionally review things nowhere near as often as I should, people send me mini comics, and I get all these mini comics. I was talking to one of the local retailers, Lucky's Comics, and Gabe there, he'll, you know, he'll sell pretty much the stuff I talk about on the show, like very similar tastes and stuff. And he's going down to Ape, you know, this weekend to go and see these mini comics and wonder, like, how much of this aspect should folks actually be getting these comics into your hands instead of just sending an email going, hey, check this out. Would that...
That doesn't hurt. If we see something that comes into our store that we really like, we'll go after that person and try and get it in, but... For the most part, there's so many minis out there, and the interest level in minis we find to be dwindling a little bit, except amongst the sort of the initiated, that, you know, like we kind of just want to start turning people away. Like we used to, when I started working there, go to shows and search out cool minis and pick them up and put them in the store. But now it's just like, you know, we're waiting for the absolute cream of the crop to come to us, just because there's so much material out there, and we're already devoting, you know, three or four times more space to the minis than they're actually selling to justify, just because we like having cool, good stuff at the store you're never going to find anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Does that kind of bring in an idea then of folks need to kind of re-examine how they're presenting their work?
Oh, I could go on for hours. Oh, it doesn't talk, though.
What was that? What did you say?
Does that bring an idea of how people should present their work or maybe re-present their work?
Well, I'd say, having sold my own minis to Christopher, they do have a pretty open door policy over there, which was...
No, you mean you're doing great stuff. Come on.
No, I mean, it was really nice. When I was at TCAF last year, I was there with some of the CCS guys, like Joe Lambert and Alec Longstreth and Chuck Buck, and it was really like, hey guys, come after the show, bring your minis by the store. You know, we bought like five each of all our stuff, and it was really cool. It makes you feel valued too, as a someone who's, you know, it's like if you ask a girl out on a date and she says no, obviously you're going to feel a little crummy. So all the yeses really add up over time. That might not be the best metaphor in the world, but what I was going to say is with the convention component is being able to get something and then look at it later, even if someone just drops it off with you, and then you can look at it and decide to contact them, is key for me. And also, as a convention organizer, and I suspect that Mr. Butcher might feel similarly, I feel compelled to support the people that purchase table space at our show as well, out of some kind of loyalty. You know, like, oh, this person comes to our show every year, whether they make money or not. I'm going to buy some of the things. I'm going to stock them in the store so our customers can get exposed to that kind of stuff. And it's kind of a self-perpetuating loop. You know, those people then go out and promote our show and their appearance there. It's just, you know, like a community thing, which I think many comics is kind of based on. I don't know if anyone is getting rich making mini comics, but it is like a very interesting and egalitarian way to enter the comics field, which is what I like about it.
It's interesting you're talking about a couple of things, like going to the store, and then you're going with like Joe Lambert, Chuck McBuck, and Al Klongstreth. I mean, especially Joe and Chuck, like these are two guys who their minis are little pieces of art too, so it's, they're not just minis. Like, I got to say, these guys step up the game well beyond most people's expectations within the field.
Yeah, well, I mean, it doesn't hurt to be hanging out with those guys, but yeah, they definitely are men among men in that field.
Yeah. Christopher, you want to say something?
Yeah, actually, you know, I feel similarly to you, Dustin, but it's not exactly the same. Like, I do appreciate that people are coming out to the show. I do appreciate that people are buying tables, but really, when it comes down to it, when we decide to pick up something for the store after TCAP, it's like, you know, I respect that. It's more of a business thing than just a support and team comics thing. Honestly, it's like these guys drove up from North Carolina or even further, and they wanted to come out and promote their work, and they wanted to, you know, show it to people that live in Toronto and people coming from around and saying, you know, this is good stuff. I respect that. Like, as a retailer, I respect that you were trying to go out of your way to actually promote your work and to generate an audience for the stuff that you're doing. And if you're willing to come to Toronto for that, which is a hell of a long way, then yeah, I'm going to make your books available because it shows that you're putting as much work in as I am in trying to sell these books. Like, it's not just about Team Comics. It's about, you know, people that are really busting their ass to get their comics known. And I totally respect that. And that's what I want to support. Not just, you know, I appreciate the people buy tables at the show. It's great. We wouldn't have a show without a cartoonist, but it's not like the reward for you buying a table is, oh, we're going to carry your books now. It's more like, hey, thanks for putting your ass in the line. Like, thanks for coming to Toronto and maybe just breaking even on the weekend just to, you know, be a part of this and to promote your stuff. Like, I really appreciate that.
I'm going to do a quick song break, and then when we get back, I want to jump into kind of more of the business of what's going on nowadays. So,
whose song are you going to play first, me or Chris's?
Well, I started out with Chris's, so I was going to play...
So he got to go first.
He didn't get to go first.
Okay.
Beauty before brains, Dustin.
Oh.
I feel about that.
Yeah. What do you want to hear, Dustin? You want to hear the...
I guess play the sad one, Robin. Just play the sad one.
I don't know which one's the sad one.
I think you do.
The Paul Simon?
It's beautiful.
Okay. Well, I'll cry a little. We'll be right back. Inkstud, CITR 101.9 FM.
Slip sliding away. Slip sliding away. You know the nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away. I know a man. He came from my hometown. He wore his passion for his woman like a thorny crown. He said, Dolores, I live in fear. My love for you is so overpowering, I'm afraid that I will disappear. Slip sliding away. Slip keep sliding away. You know, the nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away. And I know a woman became a wife. These are the very words she uses to describe her life. She said a good day ain't got no rain. She said a bad day's when I lie in bed and think of things that might have been. Slip sliding away, slip sliding away. You know the nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away. And I know a father who had a son. He longed to tell him all the reasons for the things he'd done. He came a long way just to explain. He kissed his boy as he lay sleeping, then he turned around and headed home again. He slipped sliding, slip sliding away. You know the nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away. And God only knows, God makes his plan. The information's unavailable to the mortal man. We're working our jobs, collect our pay. Believe we're gliding down the highway when in fact we're slip sliding away. Slip sliding away. Slip sliding away. You know the nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away. Slip sliding away. Slip sliding away. You know the nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away.
Filmmaker Society presents a series of cinematic salons with Vancouver International Film Festival artists between October 4th and 15th.
In its 15th year, Meet the Filmmakers is about the realization of ideas and the revelation of process.
These informal and insightful panel discussions with filmmakers attending the festival provide an opportunity for the festival audience to engage in meaningful dialogue with the visionaries of modern cinema.
Meet the Filmmakers is brought to you by Cineworks, the documentary organization of Canada BC Chapter, and the Praxis Center for Screenwriters and Women in Film and Television.
Salons are free. Just bring your love of film and prepare to be inspired. Visit cineworks.ca for up-to-the-minute information.
I'm back, CITR 101.9 FM, Ink Studs. Just so people know what's coming up on the show in the next couple of weeks, next week my guests will be Jill Thompson and Evan Dorkin to discuss the Beasts of Burden comic, and fans of Evan Dorkin can find some of his strips on Christopher's blog, comics212.net. Week after that, I'll have Abby Denson on to join us again. She came on quite a long time ago on the show, and she's come back to Vancouver to do an event at Elstar Comics on Halloween. And on the 5th of November, I will be joined by Jeet here, noted comics academic, and Professor Paul Stanwood, one of the docs here at UBC in the English department, and we're going to be talking about Robert Crumb's Genesis book, and we're going to be analyzing it and discussing it, and does it work? How you guys doing?
I'm good.
Good? Have I got you both there?
I'm also doing good. Or well, I'm doing both.
Good and well. That's what I like to hear. Let's jump into how retailing is changing and what do you guys think is going to happen? Because it's not the same anymore.
Apropos, coming after Slip Sliding Away, I think that's a very good segue.
You picked that on purpose, didn't you?
Well, I didn't know what you were going to ask me.
I guess the context is the main comics distributor minimum orders changing, so people have to sell a buttload of comics in order to even make it into this ridiculous catalog, which I know, Dustin, you have many comments to make on the uselessness of the catalog, for lack of a better term, I guess.
You mean I have many comments, or Christopher does?
I thought, well, maybe you both do.
I probably do. Christopher has very famously done by his live blogging.
The wonderful live blogging.
His order form. Yeah, he's probably got a good arsenal prepared. A good ammo clip there on his belt, bandolier combo.
Well, Senior Christopher, how do you see comics changing, and how do you see retailers need to kind of step up and change how they are ordering?
Oh, Jesus.
or is that loaded?
That's a big question. The starting point is, I think, that the direct market probably isn't going anywhere. The best thing that publishers, as well as self-publishers and small publishers, can do is really figure out how the direct market works and really put some time into figuring out, like, ordering cycles and talking to comic book retailers and things like that. So, if you're going to be having a publishing empire, great or small, definitely try and figure out the direct market, because it's basically free sales. The DM, I don't know if people know this, but comic book stores buy all their books non-returnably, which is a huge pain in the ass in some ways, but in other ways it's great, because it means we get a slightly better discount, and there's a convenience of ordering from one retailer. This is great but publishers love this, because it means that if they sell 400 copies to Diamond, those 400 copies aren't coming back. But if they sell 400 copies through their bookstore distributor, or their other distributors, they could end up with 390 of them back, and then be out a whole bunch of money for their shipping and things like that. So people, when they figure out the direct market, love it. But so many mainstream publishers do it so badly that it's kind of embarrassing, actually, where you see this multinational conglomerate publisher that can't figure out how to work the previous catalog. And I'm not saying it's easy. I'm just saying it's important. But on the other side of it, we're finding in previews more and more irrelevant, partly because I don't feel like Diamond is always trying as hard as they could to make sure that they're representing the big conglomerate publishers who are now doing graphic novels. The most famous example I can think of is this publisher called Hachette Books. Huge, huge international publisher. They handle Asterix and Tintin. They publish all kinds of stuff. And they have their own manga line here in North America called Yen Press. And just about, I guess, maybe 5 to 6 months ago now, after the order minimums thing, they canceled a bunch of books because they didn't. Yen Press, comic book retailers ordering through previews, didn't order enough copies of those books to make it worthwhile, I guess, for Diamond to distribute, and so they didn't. And we got a notice saying, "Hey, all these books that you ordered, they're not coming in." So as a retailer, we had to look at this and go, "Does this mean we're not going to carry them, or does this mean we find alternate distribution sources for them?" And we went and found alternate distribution sources for them, because we like to think of ourselves as a good full-line retailer. But what they neglected to do was tell us that they were never going to solicit any future volumes of those books. So we ordered number 7, and they canceled it and said, "We're not giving you number 7 of this book. It's called Cynical Orange. It's a fantastic title." But then they didn't tell us at all when number 8 was being solicited. They just didn't solicit it anymore. And so it became up to us to track down that book. And whether or not Yen Press didn't let Diamond know, or Diamond, which is more likely, just saying, hey, this didn't make it on the last volume, so there's no way you're going to make the minimums on this next volume, so we're just not going to run the solicitation for this book. So we find out 2 or 3 months later, you know, this book that we've ordered the first 6 or 7 volumes of through Diamond, they just decided they weren't soliciting 8 and up anymore, and they were done. They didn't tell us, and they maybe didn't even tell Yen, which is kind of hilarious. And that's the reality of ordering these days, is that not only is Diamond, who has been for, you know, 15, 20 years, not only have they been soliciting every comic and graphic novel that was published for all this time, and now they're just not. But they're not telling you either, and they're not working with retailers to, you know, help them keep getting stuff. It's not really in their interest. They only, you know, they don't want you ordering from anybody else. But it's just, that's the enormity of the change that's happened. And so, as retailers, I've really had to step up my ordering game, and, like, I'm ordering from, we've always ordered from more than just Diamond, but now the number of monthly orders I place with different distributors has gotten huge, and it's just, you know, another hour, another 2 hours, another 3 hours, another 4 hours on my ordering every month. So, you know, it's a smart retailer, I think, has to start looking at all of the different alternate sources they can order from and making it worthwhile. And then in Canada, it's even harder. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
There's no consolidation in Canada like there is in the States, because so many different publishers have different distribution agreements in Canada, and the books aren't always available. So, yeah, becoming a retailer now is maybe 3 or 4 times as hard as it was 5 years ago. With that, though, we've had, you know, increased sales and more people coming to the stores. Like Dustin says, there's like 1,000% more women coming in than there used to be, and it's great. And I'm glad we have the product for them.
I would add to that the idea of Diamond's the order minimum, which I'm not, if your listeners don't know, it's a recently ratcheted up policy where they'll only carry, what is it, do you know the cutoff, Christopher? Is it like 2,000?
3,500.
Really? Yeah, it's actually 6,500 retail, though.
Okay.
It has to hit a certain level, and otherwise they're not going to carry it. Like the recently, I think Chris Pitzer at Ed House just announced that they had to cancel the FLCL? No,
FCHS.
FCHS. I'm thinking of a manga. How about that? Because it was underordered, so... So it has kind of real ramifications. I was looking forward to carrying that book, too. We had those two as guests at Heroes Con, and the pages for that book look amazing.
Yeah, it's FCHS. It's Vito Del Sante. He's got a lot of that stuff online, too. It's a good book, man.
Vito and Rachel Frere, I think, is how you say her last name?
Yeah.
But they're amazing. But, I mean, the book just felt Diamond's not going to carry it because there just weren't enough ordered. I believe that was the problem. But... I don't have a problem with that from a business standpoint, in the same way that I can't order every mini comic. You can't expect Diamond to order every book. The problem is that they occupy a monopolistic or a semi-monopolistic position within comics. So that kind of decision from that monolithic company sends out enormous, you know, ripples through the direct market, which used to be like 6 or 7 or 8 different distributors. I think when me and Christopher started, there was Diamond, there was Heroes World, there was Cap City, there were distributors all over the place, and a lot of times New Comics Day would be spread over like Wednesday and Thursday. I think maybe Cap City stuff came in on Thursdays or something.
I think
like that.
It was originally Thursday, and then I think one distributor pulled it to Wednesday, and then everyone quickly moved over to Wednesday. I worked in a comic store from 94 to 96, just disclosure.
And there's a bunch of old retail fuzzy duddies.
Yeah.
Man, I don't even feel old. I actually do have a problem with Diamond deciding not to carry that, but I also have a problem with the retailer who decided not to order that as well, because A, it's a good book and a good looking book, and B, that was a free Comic Book Day book. Like, they did a lot of promotion and a lot of effort to get the word out on that one, you know? And
yeah,
for
and
people
that's not
to
like
have ordered
made
it
any
after
money on that. Like
Comic
Book is pure PR.
Yeah. Yeah. I know Pitzer put out like maybe 15,000 copies, maybe more of that book, like Ad House did, just to try and, you know, drum up interest and support the graphic novel release. And, you know, we were looking forward to it. I hope that there's some way it can still get printed or published. I know that without Diamond orders, it's basically impossible because, you know, they're ordering, again, non-returnable. You know, that 300 or 400 copies can help pay for the whole print run.
Something that kind of sticks out to me is it seems like the book industry or the comic book industry, there it's really like antagonistic, kind of in that aspect of how you're dealing with this distributor. And I don't know if it's the same kind of challenges in the book industry, where you do have more distributors, but you have options and you're able to work with those options, I think. Is that...
We don't have this antagonistic a relationship anymore at the Big Island, because I don't know that we ever did. I know there's a lot of emotion invested in being a retailer and in comics in general. I mean, people mm-hmm. don't just read them and put them back on the shelf. They really feel passionately about comics, and that's nice. but it causes a lot of that antagonism that you talk about, where people take bad marketing decisions really personally, or bad, you know, retail decisions really personally. Distributor, you know, like all that stuff. And I think that one of the things that opening the market back up by having more distributors carrying comics and having more options for savvy retailers is that, you know, this is not just going to be Diamond fucked me and now I'm fucked like it was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
It's Diamond fucked me and now there's three other people I can go to and fix their mistake by Friday and learn my lesson and not order that product from Diamond anymore. And if I was Diamond, I'd be terrified of that. I would be working really hard to fix the problems that they've got going on, particularly with Olive Branch.
Do you think they care?
I do. I honestly think they do.
Yeah, I think they realize the market's
shifting really hard. But I mean, you know, you move into a new facility and you've got all new staff who don't know comics at all, and they've been used to, you know, I don't know how detailed to get here. This is a radio show, but. Realistically, they just moved to a giant new distribution warehouse, and they're trying to train. Pardon me?
I said supposedly a state-of-the-art new massive city, you know, warehouse. Go ahead. Mm. Sorry.
But they're training all new staff, and you know it's been a month or sorry, almost a year now of problems, and it's it couldn't come at a worse time for them, to be completely honest. Just because there's so many options for us now as retailers. And I think that even the diehard Wednesday superhero comics retailers are starting to realize there's a lot of stuff that we can't get through Diamond that we mm-hmm. should be carrying just for our superhero customers, let alone all the other stuff that Diamond has abandoned. Like, I think that they've abandoned manga in a big way. I think that they've abandoned not all art comics, but definitely the smaller presses and the indie stuff in a big way over the last couple of years. So, you know, like, if you're a superhero comic book retailer and you can't get your superhero comic book stuff through Diamond, then Diamond needs to look at what they're doing.
Who have you had success working with other than Diamond recently?
Yeah, I'd like to hear that list, too.
It's all Canadian. That's the other thing.
yeah.
So it's going to be of use to nobody. Actually, you know what? Baker & Taylor out of the U.S. is really good at being like an order consolidator. They're like a middleman distributor. The discounts aren't that bad, and it works out in Canada. But really, we just started working with book distributors, and we're lucky enough that we're doing enough volume that we can meet their order minimums. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we get most of our manga through the bookstore distribution channels, and that's all public knowledge. And we get, you know, Baker & Taylor's really good when the dollar's strong, the Canadian dollar's strong. When the Canadian dollar's weak, it's awful to order from Baker & Taylor. So, you know, it works out. It's just we have to do a lot of juggling and pay really close attention to exchange rates, and we have to pay really close attention to discounts and reorder penalties and things like that. Yeah, that's the other thing. I can't believe that Diamond still charges a reorder penalty of 3%. Like 3%, any other distributor, yeah. You place an order and they're happy to get the order. Diamond treats it as a problem and they charge us, instead of, you know, getting a regular discount, they knock 3 points off to punish us for not having ordered it up front, which is insane. I can't believe that what a backwards-ass way of doing business that is.
I think a lot of Diamond's problems with their policies is that system kind of came to fruition in the late 70s, early 80s, and then hasn't really changed that much, even though the world, the economy around it has changed tons, right? Like,
yeah.
There's so many different ways to get, not just to buy comics, but to view comics. I mean, you could spend all day looking at comics on the internet and never spend a penny, except for your, you know, broadband connection, if it's that, or on your stinking iPhone now. And so Diamond is still very much rooted in a very brick and mortar direct market model that grew up out of you know, let's sell comics somewhere beside drugstores, but has not at all moved into the 21st century, I don't think. And if you doubt that, if you're a retailer and go use Diamond's website and try to hunt something, you will be convinced in seconds. Mm-hmm. It's the most ridiculously hard to figure out useless database on the entire internet, I think. It drives me crazy. I'm very happy that I don't have to mess with ordering anymore. It is a great joy in my life, although a terrible woe to the person that took it over from me.
It is the most intense thing I do in a given month now. Even when TCAP is on, I'm still doing the ordering, and it's just brutal. So I feel you. I do want to say, I want to try and present both sides of the issue here. We actually did a book debuting at this year's TCAP Festival. This is the first time The Beguiling had ever published a book, and it was called Key Moments in the History of Comics, and mm-hmm. it was by one of our featured guests, Francois Roll, and he didn't really have a lot of work published in English, and he was coming all the way from France. We wanted to make sure there was something really cool for people to pick up by him at the show that spoke English, you know. So we did this sort of little chapter book, and I really liked the book, and we had some copies left over, and we decided to solicit it through Diamond. And I'm going to be honest, I've been looking at previous catalogs and figuring out the best way to write solicitation text for, again, the past 15, 20 years. And we talked to D&Q, who were big supporters of TCAF, and they were nice enough to solicit it for us in their section, and they made it sort of clear it wasn't a D&Q book. And we got great orders on it, like great orders. It's the second book ever published in English by a French cartoonist, and it's like a black and white little chapter book, and it's $10
for it. I have one.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate it.
I love that book.
That's great. And we were totally, totally shocked, to be honest, at how high the numbers came in. But it just goes to show that, like, if you really do position something well, and we tried to do a lot of promotion for it, being in previews and stuff like that, and the retailers came through, and Diamond came through by giving us a decent solicitation and not editing out the text too much. And, you know, it's despite all the problems that Dustin and I are describing the system, and they're totally real and totally valid. There are ways for smart publishers to get around them and get to the retailers and sell them the books. And that's the thing that I would hope everyone takes away, is that, like, the system is broken, we should all be trying to fix it, but that's no excuse not to do, you know, the legwork. That's not an excuse not to put the work in and try and really make your book a success.
That's the speaking of that book, the Key History in the Moments of or Key History. Speaking of that book, one of the cool things about it is I brought some back for the store from TCAF, and the people that bought it were people that it was like almost like an impulse buy. Like I bet I could have sold 50 in a little stand by the register, because especially the girls or people were just like, oh, that looks kind of interesting. Like there's no real story or anything. You just kind of pick it up, flip through the pages. We sold out like right away. I was looking forward to getting that from Diamond now, because we haven't been able to restock those. That is a cool little thing.
Oh, well, thank you. I really do.
Playback? Is that right? Playback? He did the art. Someone else wrote that?
Yeah, it was an adaptation of Raymond Chandler, and he did the art for it. That one's still technically in print, although most stores don't really care. It was like a really early mainstream publisher graphic novel kind of a book.
I just wanted to throw my two cents in on that. I like that book a lot. I was impressed.
Oh man, thanks.
I gotta say, guys, I think we're out of time.
No.
What?
Look at the time. We got just a couple minutes left.
That's cool. I gotta go to kung fu practice anyway, guys. Nerd.
Oh, I've gotta go to ninja practice actually over here. So
whatever, nerds. How many tips does your throwing star have on it?
Three.
Oh, is that it? That's cool. That's all right. That's really more of a caltrop, but, you know.
I'm going to go home and drink.
Nice.
Thank you both for coming and joining me today. It was swell, as always. And folks, check out the stores, The Beguiling and Heroes Aren't Hard to Find. I haven't been to Heroes Aren't Hard to Find, but one day I'll make it. But
oh,
I can.
Man, come on down. I'll treat you like a prince.
All right. But I will say...
I was talking to Christopher.
Oh, nice. Thanks.
The Beguiling is one of the few places where I was able to find a Hugo Pratt book I needed. So just right there, it got my heart.
So. The Beguiling, we carry everything. Beguiling.com.
Okay, thank you so much, guys.
No problem.
Thank you very much.
All right. Bye. Like I said, that was Christopher Butcher from The Beguiling and Dustin Harbin from Heroes Aren't Hard to Find. Both very fascinating guys. Recommend checking out Chris's blog, comics212.net, and Dustin Harbin. I think it's dharbin.com. I can't remember. I totally forgot to check it out in advance. And yeah, it's dharbin.com. And he's a fine cartoonist in himself. I can't speak for Christopher's cartooning chops, but I will have to track down and find out what his comics that he did 15 years ago look like, because I always like seeing that kind of thing. Up next is Japanese Music West. And like I said, next week I will have Evan Dorkin and Jill Thompson on. Hopefully Evan's nicer to me this time. Last time he was on, he made fun of me for an hour straight. Actually, it was kind of fun. I take it as a compliment when Evan Dorkin makes fun of me. And that's about it, folks. See y'all later.
I'm in a rock and roll band.